Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
Lethal simplicity. I like to score fast. It's hard not to be a Noles fan. Get Florida State back. I want a damn good defense. We're still undefeated. Blame no one. Make no excuses. Do something.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, still. Rumors of my retirement to the contrary. I am still here. I'm, of course, Jason Staples. And man, has this been a busy last few weeks for me. It's been a news-filled last few weeks for Florida State, obviously in camp and all that. And I've been itching to get back to the mic, but getting studio time has been extremely difficult for me. Should have things pretty much normalized by now, but listeners know that I've recently made a move, and so that was a big factor in getting situated. Has been more of an ordeal than I expected, with my wife, particularly with my wife being involved in her first year of medical school and all that goes with that, and several other things that have transpired over the last couple weeks. I've just not been able to get in studio time. And you add that to also the now 2 hour per day commute to where I'm coaching for the rest of this year. That's taken also a few hours off of the out of the availability area for me each week. Now, I will say that also I'm thinking about during the season actually using that commute time for some podcasting. I've got some equipment that I can put together and potentially do some podcasting from the car on that commute. So I can get more episodes out. So that's something I'm looking into doing and seeing how that would work, if I can manage that. It obviously takes some more post-production editing and so on. But I've got the to make it sound decent. But I've got the gear, I've got the equipment to handle that. So that's something that may be coming here in the future as I do some work during the season. But enough about that. I'm excited to be back and cover a tremendous amount of stuff over the past 3 weeks, really, since I had a chance to check in with anybody. And basically lots to talk about here with Florida State camp, and there's almost 2 weeks into camp and already had a major scrimmage, some position changes, tons to talk about. So let's go ahead and jump right into it. But before I do that, I do want to thank the show's sponsors. First and foremost, the primary sponsor of this podcast, the one who has been the sponsor from my first sponsor, and that is Lewis Marquez from Keller Williams Realty in Jacksonville, Florida. Lewis has been on a tear selling houses like crazy. If you need to buy a house in that area, call Lewis. If you need to sell a house in the greater Jacksonville area, then you need to list with Lewis. You're not going to work with anybody that's better than Lewis. Let him know you heard about him from the Unconquered Podcast, and definitely help the show out a lot. Help me a great deal. So yeah, thanks Lewis for re-upping for one more year. And I'll get to a little bit more about the other sponsor later in the show. So anyway, all right. Well, first thing I want to do, and this shows how long it's been since the last time I was able to do a podcast, I want to talk through a few decisions that Florida State and Willie Taggart made at the beginning of camp that were newsworthy, and I wanted immediately to run to the mic and podcast about them at the time, but I just didn't have the chance. Well, I still want to get some comments in on them before I do anything else. So let's get to it. Number one is hiring Mickey Andrews as an assistant to the coaching staff. So not an assistant coach, but an assistant to the coaching staff. Hiring Mickey Andrews was a stroke of genius, in my opinion, on Willie Taggart's part. If you go back and listen to the podcast that I put together after I visited Florida State and spent some time with Coach Andrews this last spring, man, I tell you what, I came back going, man, Mickey still has some fire in the belly. He's still got some gas in the tank and a lot to contribute. He's still got something to offer. It's just too bad he can't come out and help more. Well, it appears that Taggart had the same idea and decided, you know, Andrews still has some stuff that he can bring and offer And this is the other thing, is that Willie Taggart has been really emphatic about his desire to be a bridge between Florida State of old, its old legacy and identity as a program, sort of reinfusing Florida State's traditional DNA into the current Florida State program. And you can see this by him doing another thing that I thought was very smart during camp and having the players do the first week of camp, watching the they watched the Bowden dynasty as a part of that as a team thing, watching, you know, old stuff, old Florida State stuff, getting these players to understand what kind of program they're in and what DNA runs through the uniforms that they're putting on. Although I really do wish they'd go back to those white numbers. It drives me crazy. And we still haven't gotten back to something that looks a little bit closer to the dynasty era uniforms in terms of that, with a modern twist. That's fine, but they need to get that straight. But I digress. But what Taggart has done is he's wanted to infuse the old Florida State identity of let's go fast, spread them out. I mean, you remember Florida State, before anybody else was doing this, or just about anybody else was doing it, Florida State was running the fast break offense in the 90s. Let's spread them out and go fast, be innovators in that regard. And, you know, now it's maybe not so innovative, but Florida State was doing it before anybody else was, and that was the identity. And he wants to get back to that offensively, same thing defensively, and we'll talk a little bit more detail about this later in the show, but basically get back to that attacking defensive mentality, attack, 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 where it's simple defensively. We're not going to be doing a ton of scheming, but we're going to rely on having better athletes than you. And you may beat us, but you're not going to beat us because, you know, we were busy scheming out, trying to out scheme you and got our guys confused. You're going to beat us because your guys are just better than our guys. And that goes right to what Coach Bowden also talked about back at the spring clinic. And he was saying, you know, the secret to my coaching was to get better players than the other coach and then just put them in positions where they can excel. And, you know, you don't tend to lose a lot if you just have better players and then you put them in positions to succeed and get out of their way. And you're going to win more often than not. That's what Bowden was saying. And that's a lot of what Taggart's trying to do. And getting Mickey Andrews on campus and in practice it's a stroke of genius. And obviously, I have the utmost respect for Coach Bowden. And I mean, Bobby Bowden built the Florida State program. He is the godfather of Florida State football. But you can make the case that Mickey Andrews, in terms of the ethos and the personality of what Florida State became, in terms of the specific identity of that nasty, suffocating presence of being in Doak Campbell Stadium when Florida State was on defense, you can argue that Mickey Andrews, at least as much as Coach Bowden, that it's his DNA that infuses that program as much as Coach Bowden. And bringing him back to work with these players and to be a part of the program now is a way of reinfusing that DNA into the program with players who you know, they don't remember that. The stuff that was happening before they were born. And, you know, getting that culture back in there. And it's a stroke of genius. And quite frankly, I mean, it's another decision where you have to say, I mean, Willie Taggart's undefeated in the offseason. I mean, Willie Taggart ran the table against the offseason schedule. I mean, if he coaches as well in season as he has in the offseason, wow. And another thing I actually really liked was going with separate practices. And I know other outlets have covered this, but, you know, the benefit of that is pretty significant. And actually that marks another return to what Coach Bowden used to do. You'd have freshman or newcomer practice, and then you'd have the veteran practice. And until the freshmen were ready to drop them in with the vets. And why do you do that? Well, the vets have already been through install in the spring. They already know what they're doing, even more so in the future. But you've already coached them on various techniques and coached them on where you need to line up in this formation and all that. And so what happens is when you drop all the freshmen, all the newcomers in, and they don't know that stuff, you're coaching them on the way that you want it done. They're not used to the tempo that you're running practice with. And you're having to coach them on, no, you stand here and not here. And no, your stance needs to be this way and not that way. And no, you come off the ball this way and not that way. And no, we do it this way here. All those little coaching things that you do in practice with the newcomers, all that takes time. And every time one of those newcomers has to be coached and shown where to line up and all that stuff, one of the vets is missing a rep. So what you do, you can coach each individual player 20 hours. So you split your time. You coach more as a coach. You got 40 hours of coaching and practice. You got more responsibility there. But that what that means is you can spend that extra time in those meetings and in the practice with the young guys, working it so that they actually are up to speed faster. You can spend hands-on time with them so that they know they can get all those additional reps in those individual freshman practices of lining up and going through individual drills and learning how we run this play here and how we do this drill here. And they get orders of magnitude more reps than they would otherwise. And you're not costing any veterans their reps. So you can, and then eventually you can drop those guys in and hit with the vets, you can install much faster and do all of that. And by the time the freshmen are incorporated into that practice, those freshmen have already caught up a lot more with what you're doing and you're further along with the vets. I love it. You're getting the best of both worlds. And again, it goes back to thinking a little outside the box of how people tend to do things these days, but going back to what Florida State used to do. And again, I like that a lot. So a few other things. I saw at one point that, and I've gotten some questions about this, and there's been some discussion about this online, about the coordination situation on the offense. And this is something that I want to nip in the bud right away. I mean, first and foremost, Walt Bell is Florida State's offensive coordinator. But, and I've talked about this on the program a lot in the past, about the difference between a play caller and an offensive coordinator. They are different jobs. You can actually be an offensive coordinator and not call the plays because your job as the coordinator is to coordinate. Walt Bell's job is organizational and is making sure that Willie Taggart's vision is reflected in all the drills that the quarterbacks and the wide receivers and the running backs and offensive line and tight ends are doing. And he makes sure that all of those things are working together towards the same goals and that they're working toward the same install and that we understand what our practice is oriented toward, what our practice script is going to be. We understand what plays we're installing, what drills these position units are doing in individual and what we're going to emphasize for each individual position group in terms of and he's also going to have a major impact in terms of film study and what we can do versus what they do and all that. All that's part of the coordination process. Now, most offensive coordinators also call the plays, which leads to some of the confusion, but obviously that makes a lot of sense because you've been the guy that is making sure that everything works toward a common vision. But more and more today, as head coaches have more support on their staffs, and head coaches also understand that they got hired in part because of success that they had as assistants and as younger coaches, a lot more head coaches call their own plays these days. Well, in that case, the head coach may have an offensive coordinator like Walt Bell who isn't calling the plays, and Walt Bell is not going to be calling the plays for Florida State. Let's just make that very clear. There's been some discussion about this. I talked to Walt Bell. I've talked to Walt Bell about what they're doing at Florida State, and Walt understands what he was brought in for. He's not running his offense at Florida State. He's been very clear about that. This is not Walt Bell's offense. It's Willie Taggart's offense, just like Jimbo ran Jimbo's offense. Willie is going to be calling the plays. And Willie sets the vision for what they're calling. Now, Walt and the rest of the staff will have some impact during the week and, you know, in film session and all that. We do this better than we do that. And this is what they're showing on film. And this is how I think we can attack that. They're going to have a voice. And Willie is collaborative in that regard. And when you're running a tempo offense, you also have to have a clear script set where what you do is predetermined a lot. And I've made these sheets, and I'm looking at one that I made for our first week this year now. And I've talked to Walt about how he's done this in the past. You look at the situational play calling sheet. You've got a play calling chart. And what you have is you have a series of, okay, neutral run plays, neutral pass plays, first and 10, you know, second and six and so on. You have drive starters. You have, and you break those down by hash mark, middle of the field, and other hash mark. You have percentages of what defenses they're in those situations on film. You have second long pass, second long run, divided out by hash mark again, third and medium, third and long. All your situational stuff, short yardage pass, short yardage run. You've got shot plays. And you know, Jimbo is big on, and this is something that in talking to Tino Sunseri a while back. This is something that that he talked about in terms of how Jimbo did things, where you would have you know, shot plays on. He would distinguish between shot plays and chunk plays. You know, stuff that you had schemed up for each one, and then you also have your special plays. You have your coming out of the end zone plays, your goal line plays, run play, pass play, and all that. And all of that is predetermined during the week. By and large, you rep that stuff based on situations during the week. So we know that when we're in third and three, we've got these four or five options that we're probably going to be running. And we rep the heck out of them during the week in those situations. That's what you do. And actually, what's interesting is Florida State is so coordinated on this that what they'll do is they'll have then follow-up plays basically designed, baked in, so that if this play, let's say we're calling a play from the right hash, and we've got trips left, and we're calling a play from the right hash, what we're doing is we know that that play, based on the call, is most of the time going to wind up running out to the left hash. So we have a play prepped that we're going to be able to get to the line of scrimmage and line up and run that play as quickly as possible with as few guys moving from one side of the field to the other as possible. So we have this call prepared as if we do end up on the left hash, here's the call we have next, so that we know we're going to be able to get this off more quickly and potentially put the defense most off balance based on that shift. That's how deeply they're going into this. And a lot of that's predetermined. They'll have single word calls prepared for those kinds of situations. Like, well, we shifted hashes, so we're going to make this call so that all of a sudden we'll have trips into the boundary on that case. And we're going to be prepared to run this play as a boundary play from shifting hashes based on expectation here. And so that's going to be on, you know, the sort of thing that you prep on there, that's prepped on the sheet. And then when you have Walt and you have different offensive assistants on the phones, that's the stuff that they're feeding down to Taggart to make sure he remembers. That's your job, is to make sure that the head coach remembers what you worked on in practice so that he knows what he can call. But he's the one that's calling the plays. There's no doubt about this. And there's no situation in which there's any question about who's going to be calling what, and we're not talking about split play call duties in any situation at all. So let's go ahead and put that to bed. And I should mention also, I mean, I've spent a decent amount of time in the film room with Walt Bell's brother, who will almost certainly be on Walt Bell's staff when Walt Bell is a head coach. And the similarity in terms of their philosophy, vocabulary, the way that they talk about everything, it's as striking as you would expect. Okay, next question. And I'm going to run through a few questions that I've gotten without necessarily mentioning who it is. I mean, you all know who you are at this point, but I've gotten a number of questions about these sorts of things. In terms of tempo, what tempo is Florida State going to be running this year? Are we looking at, you know, are they really going to be an up-tempo team, or are they going to just run, you know, different tempos and so on? Well, again, from what I understand, they are going to be up-tempo as the default. Now, what I was told is we're going to run up-tempo, but we have no play goals. We don't believe in play goals. We don't believe in, you know, shooting for 80 or 85 plays. We're not trying to run a lot of plays. We're trying to be efficient. And so we're going to run at the speed that's going to make us most efficient, that's going to keep the defense off balance without costing us the ability to execute. So they're going to run as fast as they can without diminishing their ability to execute. And then, you know, there was some acknowledgement that, yeah, you do need to be able to slow things down at the, you know, in the 4-minute offense or whatever. But the thing that was said then is that still doesn't mean you have to huddle. Still doesn't mean you have to slow things down in terms of when you get to the line of scrimmage. You can get to the line of scrimmage and then delay, which is what they'll do sometimes. You know, when they get up enough, that's what you'll see. But by and large, they're going to default to fast. And that's going to be the way things are going to be at Florida State. Now, there's a difference between the default speed fast in terms of how you call plays versus what they would call warp, right? You go warp, which is where you have one word call that has all the information that's going in. So these are specific plays that you've got designed so that when this situation arises, let's say you have a big play and there's a big play, and you know that they've got this particular personnel on the field. You've prepared for this. Now you have a one-word call. It might be orange. Orange, orange, orange. Every player knows that orange actually means, say, trips right, you know, trips right, Z short motion, you know, dart, something like that. And they know, and you're going to get another number of syllables in there depending on what they're trying to communicate, but it could be any number of things, but they've worked on that week as a one word call for certain situations. That's the really warp speed stuff. And you'll see some of that. So there will be some speed variance, but by and large, they're just going to go fast. So again, that's another thing to think about there. Next thing is about the kind of defense that Florida State is going to be running. And this gets into a few things in terms of some of the position changes that they've made and all that. We're going to get to some of that here in the second half of the podcast. But once again, they're running. So I've talked through this before. I mean, there's one of the podcasts when the staff first got hired, I had talked to a good number of coaches who coached with Harlan Barnett at Michigan State and asked them what to expect. And one of the coaches said, well, you need to ask Harlan about the time that, you know, when he was coaching high school football and he blitzed all but one play in that game. Every play he called a blitz except for one. That's his personality. He's going to, if he's got the guys he thinks can cover, he's coming. He's going to blitz hard and he's going to put pressure on all game. That said, the default that they're running is basically the Michigan State scheme. What was put together as under the Michigan State brain trust of Mark D'Antonio, Pitt coach Pat Narduzzi, and Harlan Barnett putting this stuff together. And the base idea is that you can do a lot of different match principles and all sorts of flexible stuff out of a core cover four look. And that's what Michigan State did. What they did, and actually this is what a lot of people forget, is Mark D'Antonio is actually a part of the Saban coaching tree. It's a version of the Saban-Belichick approach. But what they've done is instead of building out of a base, middle of the field, closed, match three defense, you're running a Saban-style defense out of a middle of the field open look with an extra where you're getting the extra guy in the box by putting a half a safety in the box on each side and working your way down to take advantage of being able to press a bit more on both sides with your corners and being a bit more flexible. The benefit that they felt like they got, and this is something that I went to a clinic where D'Antonio spent a lot of time on this. D'Antonio talked about what they've done to simplify, to make things easier to defend, spread, and particularly up-tempo stuff. And that's where, you know, with all the checks that you have to do, that you have to handle for what Saban actually does at Alabama, they felt like they could simplify and get the players to certain automatic checks, automatic things out of a more flexible shell, running the same basic thing so that the worst case scenario is we're running a defense where at least everybody is on the same page. When they go fast, everybody knows where they've got to be, what their assignment is. So we're never going to get caught out of position. If somebody beats us, they beat us. And that's one of the benefits of that defense and why they made some of the changes that they made, why they went to that cover four flexible shell. And that allows you to be more balanced in terms of the defense, in terms of what looks you're presenting to the offense. Now, there are a lot of things that you can do offensively to try to attack that. The most common is, and this is where you've seen, you know, Pittsburgh get shelled on this because they haven't had the cover guys in the secondary to handle it. But, you know, the old Saban Mill or the old Spurrier Mills play or the double post is really where that defense can show some problems, because you've got to have a safety on the inside that covers basically like a corner. And your corner has to be able to cover that, has to be fast enough and has to have good enough technique to cover a post route where he doesn't have help over the top. And that's something that Saban is kind of allergic to and why he stays middle of the field closed so often. But what you'll see is basically Harlan Barnett working out of that cover four base and then rotate a lot to effectively what becomes a man-free, middle-of-the-field closed situation in terms of how the players actually work their way down and rotate down. They end up, if you don't release four verts, you're going to get kind of a middle-of-the-field safety. You're going to get some help there, and then the other safety is going to be locked on in man coverage on that slot as he has any sort of vertical release or anything like that. So it changes and it works, and it's a match quarters concept. And there's actually a website that covers a lot of how to run this called Match Quarters. And I encourage listeners to go and visit that site and drink in what Match Quarters is all about. That's what they do. But again, Barnett, they ran less. I was told that by the Michigan State staff that Barnett ran less quarters, less true quarters than they had under Narduzzi. I mean, Narduzzi, they ran like 90% quarters. Under Harlan Barnett, they ran it like 60, 70% of the time. I don't know the exact number. But, you know, they ran the actual quarters defense less because, you know, he felt like they needed to be more flexible and you know, have some other tricks up their sleeve. And particularly, they blitzed a lot more, so you end up in man free. Or sometimes man zero. They said he's not hesitant to go man zero. No safety help. Well, you know, that's what you do if you want to bring pressure. Now, all that said, that brings us to something else that in this camp I'm pretty excited about, and that was the move of Stanford Samuels III to field safety. And this is something that as I was kind of poking through the depth chart that I keep a spreadsheet of the depth chart. And as I, you know, hear things and as I, you know, evaluate things myself, I keep up what's going on there. And I was looking at it going, you know, this is for them to run as much at quarters as they're going to run. I'm not real comfortable because they don't have that cover safety that you've got to have to be able to run this exactly right. Well, they solved that problem by moving Samuels there. Now, Samuels has been out, you know, obviously, a practice for a little bit, but looks like they're going to have him back and healthy enough to play against Virginia Tech. So, you know, you worry about that when you can. But basically, by moving Samuels to safety, he's a good enough tackler and he's willing enough against the run that you get what you want out of him in that regard. But he's also your best cover guy, which takes that position from being a liability. I mean, you can argue for Levante Taylor, and he might be a better cover guy. I mean, I think that's up in the air. And I've liked Kyle Myers since he signed. So, I mean, they've got three legit cover guys. Well, you put all three of them on the field, and now things look a lot more, that makes sense, right? And what basically, if you think about what they're doing, and this is where having Mickey Andrews out there also makes a lot of sense. Mickey Andrews' approach, And I talked about this last year on the podcast as well, the difference between what was happening with Charles Kelly and the Florida State defense against tempo, where oftentimes they weren't getting calls on time and things like that. Mickey Andrews defaulted to jet robber. The defense ran jet robber. If you didn't know what defense, you know, if the offense went quick or whatever, if you didn't know what was going on, you ran jet robber and you're going to be right 80, 90% of the time because they ran jet robber. It's a single middle of the field, closed safety down in the box. You got a rover, basically, kind of a fourth linebacker hybrid safety in the box, and you're pressing and playing press man with those wide receiver or with those corners. Okay, well, what Harlan Barnett has done is he's taken the same basic defensive approach, but instead of running it with a rover, where you have a fourth kind of hybrid linebacker safety, what he's done is he's removed one of the linebackers from the scenario, and he's added a defensive back who's a third corner. So now you're in a nickel, right? You've got a third corner, and you've got your free safety type, your boundary safety, and then you've got your rover, your hybrid linebacker safety, as your star position. So all you've done is you've substituted one of the backers for that extra cover guy, and now you've got your rover, your Derek Gibson type, as that star safety, star linebacker, whatever you want to call it, that star. And now you're running essentially a version of what Mickey Andrews is doing. Mickey would again, it was a downhill one gap, which means that every player in the front seven is responsible for one gap, and you come downhill hard trying to get penetration no matter what. You're not responsible for reading or reacting or anything like that. You're just trying to create chaos and get penetration through your gap. You're responsible for your gap. That's it. That's what they're doing up front. Well, that's what they're doing up front now. It's the same thing. Now, instead of, because teams started to attack Mickey Andrews type defenses and that personnel by spreading out and forcing that guy out of the box, and now you've got that rover trying to cover one-on-one with a fast slot receiver, that's not going to work. What do? You take one of those backers out, you put a cover guy in, and you run a similar defense. You run the same defense up front, and you hybridize the coverage to a cover four so that you don't get stuck in a spot where you got a guy that winds up being out leveraged. That's what they're doing. And that's FSU's DNA. That makes a lot of sense. And personnel wise, they should be fine there. Though again, you know, linebacker, there's some concerns, but again, back in the spring, I said, based on what I'd seen and heard, I expected Jaden would be to be the starter at the star position. I've had him penciled in there since the end of the spring. And again, that's one of the position changes that was made early in practice, that he came out first day of fall practicing at that star position. Well, that makes sense because he's not going to be a starter at the safety positions, but he might be, by the end of the season, the best linebacker on the team, certainly the best outside linebacker. And that's probably where, you know, that kind of hybrid role is where his future is at the NFL level. So there you go. Makes a lot of sense. He's one of the best players on your defense already. Get him on the field. Now, the concern is that other backer. Jackson is going to be fine at Mike. I mean, he's really made strides in the offseason. He's in the best shape he's been in. He's going to be fine. And again, he's had a tailbone thing. I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is that other backer, Adonis Thomas. You know, you hope you get the most you can out of him. You know, Brown, I've liked him since he signed, but he's not been able to stay quite as healthy as you'd like. And he's not quite as heavy at this point in his career as you'd like. So you're not sure what you're going to get there. Zaquandre White, though, offers the best athlete at that spot if they can get him ready. He's had two pick sixes in practice. So, you know, starting to come along. You wonder if Zaquandre White by the end of the year is one of the three starters in that situation, in that linebacker room. And, you know, if he is by the end of the year, that might be shored up a little bit. But again, it made a lot of sense. And I've been very clear that I'm a fan of Zaquandre White at running back. I thought he was pretty close to a five-star running back prospect and, you know, a very, very good running back prospect. But the reality is you got Akers, LeBourne, Patrick, and Rasul who are all going to get carries above him this year. So, well, you know, you've got that situation where you've got a loaded running back room and you've got problems. You got holes at linebacker. Make the switch right away. And the thing I've got to give credit to the defensive staff on, and this is something that I've talked about previously on this podcast as well. Going back to 2013, the Florida State defensive staff had been slow to move guys to where it made the most sense. It wasn't until after the Boston College game in 2013 that they finally moved Christian Jones to that buck end position and went with Telvin and Terrence Smith at the two linebackers and went with more of a 4-2-5 look. Prior to that, they'd been trying to play that kind of 5-2 Okie look with the big personnel and Christian Jones and at one of the backers, and it did not go that great early in 2013. A lot of you may not remember that, but it didn't go that well. And then you can look at the same kind of stuff happened in 2014, 2015, 2016, 2017. There were situations where you're looking at personnel moves being made 3 and 4 games into the season where they're finally figuring out like, oh, okay, that guy actually works best there. And this staff has been very proactive in getting guys moved to spots where it makes the most sense for them. And that is really encouraging. That's one of the most encouraging things about this camp for me is looking at some of the personnel moves that have been made. And I say, you know, that makes sense. That I didn't expect that guy would necessarily agree to being moved there, but actually, you know, that fixes that problem. I didn't necessarily expect them to move Stanford Samuels III. But man, that really makes that defense better. And it shores up the problem that I was most concerned about running a lot more quarters in the ACC, is that you got teams that are going to take advantage of that inside safety. You better have a guy that can cover like a corner. Well, you put Stan Samuels there, no problem. There we go. So really encouraged about that. Something that I'm pretty excited about. I feel like they've made a lot of decisions, a lot of personnel moves and so on that again, moving Wally Imade to defensive end. You're loaded at defensive tackle. He's one of your best defensive tackles, but he's definitely one of your best defensive ends slimmed down. So now, instead of having him play a tweener, you've got a dude who can actually get, you know, who can split reps at that defensive end position. A lot of these things just make sense. You know, similar to Bruton getting some reps at linebacker. Well, you know, you got safeties you're happy with. So move a guy to where you're not happiest and see if he can contribute in that spot. Again, just a lot of sensible moves. One thing I do, and this is one of those moments where I'm going to pound my chest once again. And you all know that this happens periodically. But no surprise that Keith Gavin remains in the starting lineup. Just going to say that. They've been very pleased with Gavin. You know, listen, he's not a guy that college football necessarily is. The college part is going to be the best part for him. But as a football player, once the light bulb goes on, and there have been a lot of flickers, had a great spring, didn't have the best spring game. He's had an excellent camp. It's just a matter of taking the practice range to the course. Once that happens, tell you what, that wide receiver group could be really, really good if you get out of Keith Gavin what he's been giving them. So, encouraging there. We'll see. We'll see what happens with that. So, lots of other things though. I mean, geez, I've got all sorts of questions. Some of these things I'm going to leave to another episode, which I'm going to record rather rapidly. I'm going to maybe try to get one in, get another one recorded even today, But yeah, I'm going to go ahead and bring these things up. One thing I had tweeted out on Twitter a while back was how there was a really good article on USA Football on Baylor's dart concept, how to get some out of a spread system, how to basically get ISO concepts out of a spread situation where you don't have that natural lead blocker with a sniffer or a fullback or anybody. You're in 10 personnel where you've got, you know, four wide receivers. Normally that means you can't run ISO. Well, if you RPO it just right on the edge and then you fold either the tackle, usually the tackle or one of the guards, you can actually get that ISO concept. And based on the film that I have, I've got some coaches' film. Willie Taggart has definitely used dart quite a bit. So I expect to see that a good bit. I'll put that link in the show notes if you haven't seen it already, but expect to see that. And that's one of those things, especially in the red zone, expect to see that concept quite a bit. You'll see a lot of quarterback dart, actually, where you'll see five wide receiver looks, or you'll see the running back put in motion and then it becomes an RPO screen. And if they don't run the numbers out to the motion, then the quarterback is going to run that quarterback ISO off the dart concept, basically. So quarterback dart with the screen action to the outside if you've got numbers on the outside. It's a really simple concept, but puts a ton of stress on the defense. It's something that I actually had us as a high school offense install a version of that kind of concept that we actually had the most success on in our running game our first week. Most of our running success came out of that particular play. So worth mentioning there. Let's see. In terms of some other stuff, I was asked about my projection for punt returner this year. DJ Matthews looked like he had some magic, was basically what the questioner was saying. That is true, and I expect it's probably, all things being equal, going to be DJ Matthews at least at the beginning of the year, but I would not rule out Harrison to be to become, you know, sort of the special teams ace by the end of the year. He's special with the ball in his hands, very smooth with some size. Depending on how healthy DJ Matthews is, we'll see. I'm sure we'll see Harrison some anyway. And I wouldn't rule out Helton getting some time as a punt returner as well. They've got some options there. They've got more options there than they've had in years. So I think either way, the punt return situation is going to be better. Okay, as far as the quarterback situation, I'm going to stick with what I said going into camp, that I still expect it to be DeAndre Francois. I've heard no indications that that either of the other two has sufficiently given them reason to start one of them over him. And I think that's probably that the situation as much as anything right now, because DeAndre has been sort of the most reliable thrower. And that's what really what they want out of that position, is they want someone who's going to add that dimension to this offense, because they know they're going to be able to run it a bunch with those running backs. They're going to have to keep the teams honest with consistent throwing the football. And that's where I think, again, Francois at this point is offering the most. So the competition is not over, but I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the spring or by the end of the camp that the depth chart basically goes Francois, Hockman, Blackman. And that's not a knock against Blackman per se. It just means that Hockman has also really put himself into the conversation. So that's going to be interesting. I'm not going to do any recruiting stuff on this podcast episode, but there's a number of other question and answer things that I'll get to for the next one. If you've got any Q&A, anything you want to ask, I'll answer to the best of my ability. I will say up front that some of my sources, actually all of my sources at this point, have been a bit more circumspect, a bit quieter this camp than the last few years. So I don't have a whole lot of inside stuff, but I'll answer to the best of my knowledge and, you know, deal with things as I'm able at that point. So getting on over 40 minutes here, and we'll go ahead and wrap this one. But I'll be recording some others, including some preview stuff and some. We're coming up into game week here soon, so we've got a lot of stuff to record here the next few days. But I'm going to get a bunch of episodes out as much as I can prior to the Virginia Tech game, and then we'll work from there. So until then, this has been the Unconquered Podcast. I'm back. It's Jason Staples. Thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much, and have a great day if you want to.
I made this.